Thanks, Jerry. That was really awesome. I want that Roots exhibit to be actually a traveling exhibit and how we sort of bring that about. Because I remember many years ago just drawing, trying to visualize Roots below ground, and people, I think, you know, to connect it is really cool. So that was really neat. My name's Tara Moreau, and I'm from the UBC Botanical Garden in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. My background, though, is in agriculture. The science that I had studied was pest management, so looking at how insect behavior in response to diversified versus monocropped systems. So I spent a lot of time killing a lot of bugs and trying to understand how they choose hosts and how they respond to crop diversity. I also have been fortunate to work with the UNFAO on a number of sustainability food issues projects, from organic agriculture to sustainability assessment of food systems, and so kind of had the sort of privilege of looking at things at the international level and also very much at the ground level. I started working at the UBC Botanical Garden about 3.5 years ago, and I was drawn to this job because of this unique space. So this is our food garden. It's located in the center of our botanical garden, and before I came, the classroom in the back was just being built. So we knew that this outdoor classroom in the heart of the food garden was going to provide this amazing space for us to communicate with people. We've also launched a large interpretive signage project. And what you can't see, so the UBC Botanical Garden is it's 100 years old, but across the street and behind is the UBC Farm. And so we have Vancouver has this really vibrant local food movement, and we're also really connected at the university to the Faculty of Land and Food Systems, which they sort of rebranded away from agriculture to the Faculty of Land and Food Systems. So we collaborate, we do farm and garden tours, and the public and kids can come and go see a farm and cross the street and come to the botanical garden. So again, in terms of partnerships, our location has afforded us that opportunity. So our mission is really research, conservation, public display, education, and outreach. So it's been a really neat space. The department that I run is sustainability and community programs. So it was historically education, and the director of our garden was really inspired by public garden movement towards gardens being more advocates in the community about climate change, about sustainability. And so how do we use our gardens and open up our collections, which I always describe as a living museum of plants, to people to think about these deeper global issues? And ideally, it's about having fun in nature and connecting to nature. So how do we do that? So the biggest influence I probably would say is we do educational tours. So last year we had 5,000 people come through on guided tours. We have our docents are generally undergraduate students or some graduate students at the university that are being trained in communication to talk about their favorite tour. And every time we train a guide, it's like the best tour you can give is the one where you're most excited about the topic. And so it can be forestry, food, pests, many different options. These are students exploring the kiwi vine. This is a male kiwi, and so they get to learn about male and female plants. This is actually one of the hot spots on the tour. And in the food garden, they can go and see how kiwi looks different when it's grown in agriculture. So we have kiwi growing on a trellis. We also use our food garden to do water-wise irrigation workshops and invite people in the public in to figure out how they can be growing food, but doing so in a water-wise fashion. Our biggest event, and I just survived it, was last weekend, is our annual Apple Festival. So we purchased 30,000 apples from farmers in British Columbia. We have one truck that goes and picks up these 30,000 apples. They're driven back to our parking lot where our friends at the garden, our volunteers, package them into 3-pound bags. And then we have a 2-day event where we bring in over 10,000 people to buy apples and celebrate all things apples. And a big piece of that is showcasing the diversity of apples that, you know, this year we sold about 65 different types of apples. And so it's just raising the profile that there's more than Granny Smith. There's more than, you know, there's a lot of different heirloom and rare varieties. So speaking of soils, I was always interested in the UN years. I always try to program around the UN years, recognizing that these years sometimes take a little bit of time, but they tend to trickle down into local government initiatives. And so for the UN Year of Soils, we had tours, but our most successful event was a long table dinner that we organized called the Taste of Terroir. And we were, you know, it was really geeky. We had all the tables named after soil orders, and we got some press. And then that year we actually had our local government sign on and do a proclamation on December 5th, which is World Soil Day. So it really helped us to leverage press and also to get our local governments really excited about soils. And so writing a soil proclamation was really awesome. In 2016, it was the International Year for Pulses, and so we worked with our horticultural staff, and I said, I've never grown a pulse beforehand. So we worked with, we grew probably 20 to 30 different species of pulses, trying them out in our garden, having, you know, kids get to pick off and eat chickpeas when they're fresh and green, and to talk to them about nitrogen fixation and all the great things that pulses can do. And then at the end of the year, we wrote a blog post sort of telling our story and posted it on the FAO's website. Again, trying to communicate and always trying to do these programs, but make sure that we're connecting back up to the larger initiatives. So a large project just this summer, it's taken a long time, but we did a huge interpretive signage project. We launched 65 different signs throughout our garden. 9 of those were in the food garden. And so we really worked, this is for people coming to the garden, not having a guided experience, wanting to connect them to food and the diversity of food through an engaging way. So we worked with this design company called Cygnus, and they and one of our gardeners, one of our horticultural staff is an amazing photographer, so we used most of his photographs in this to tell that story. And one of our signs is about wild crop relatives, and this is speaks to this project that we're trying to bring together to link botanical gardens and agroecologists around specifically raising the profile of wild crop relatives. And so in the background we were interpreting Vavilov and telling a bit of his story and Centers for Crop Diversity. So the American Public Garden Association, as Sarah had mentioned, has a number of professional sections, and so Ari and I co-chair the food and agriculture section. And so really this is us in the botanical garden world working with other gardens to help them to bring food literacy programs to their gardens. And actually, as Sarah said, many botanical gardens have food programs, but what we're wanting to do is provide support for educators to be sort of deepening their curriculum and engaging their public on these issues more deeply. So in terms of partnerships, a really fruitful partnership that we've had at the garden is with our regional government, Metro Vancouver. They phoned me up one day and they said, we want to create this really great resource and give people designs of how to get growing, and we know nothing about plants. And so they had the money and they had the back-end resource to create a website, and we had the horticultural knowledge. My director absolutely thought it was a crazy idea, and it took a fair bit of time and energy to sort of figure out how it would work, and again, partnerships take time, but this one became a really great site that has really increased the garden's profile in the community. And last spring we launched 42 different garden designs, so people from the public can go and select their individual sort of site characteristics, and then they can see, you get the directions on how to grow tomato, and below that is a downloadable PDF. They can go to their local grocery store and try to find varieties and get instructions on how to get growing. And again, this is around connecting with people in the urban core who have never really grown food, trying to support them and setting them up for success. So that they, and my personal theory is the power of urban food growing is that people learn how difficult it is to grow food, and then they gain a deeper appreciation for farmers. And that's been my experience. Having grown food and grown up in the city, I said, oh wow, I now have a greater respect for farming and the agricultural community. A really interesting collaboration out of this, so we created this website that's designed for the public. But part of this, as we said, if we're going to drive the public to be growing these food designs and buying these plants, we need to bring the industry along with us. And so we had a forum, our first annual forum last March, and we're doing it again this March. And this is bringing in the producers, horticultural, the landscape companies, the people who have nursery production, into the dialogue and supporting them. How do they grow green? And this also includes bringing in farmers and people who are growing food. So we're trying to bring the horticulture and the agriculture community together so that we're taking a regional approach to our natural resources. So the program I wanted to briefly talk about was probably the program that's taken up most of and provided most of my fuel for what I do. And it's a program that I offer for businesses. So we this is, it's called the Sustainable Communities Field School, and I modeled it after the FAO Farmer Field School model. In studying pests, I realized that farmers needed support and education. So I studied a lot of insect behavior, and I realized, well, actually what we need to study is human behavior. And how do we do that? And farmer field schools have been shown to be successful at reducing pesticide use through innovative education, which is basically bringing farmers together so that they connect to each other and they use each other as local knowledge and resources. So in my postdoc, I tried one in Vancouver. We started an urban farmer field school, and this was really successful for 2 years. And then the market of food-related workshops really took off, and so our participation decreased. And one of the things that we really felt is that everyone who came to these workshops was already converted. They were already on board with sustainability, and so we really wanted to reach a new audience. And so how we did that was, well, how about we reach businesses? Because we have a lot of businesses in Vancouver. We have a lot of teams. They're actually managing a lot of our natural resources and the green economy. So this is how we came up with this program that we run now. And we advertise it. Advertising was very difficult in our first few years. And this summer, we've had much success. And this is what we say. We say team building in nature. We don't promote sustainability. We just say get your team out of the office and into nature. And our basically, our best marketing tool is a canopy walkway that we have in the garden. You're up in the trees of the Pacific Northwest, and in those trees, they're learning about water conservation and where their local watersheds are. This program I have really grounded in the City of Vancouver's Greenest City Action Plan. So again, always wanting to connect to policy, and specifically, these are the areas that we the city had 10 concrete goals, and so we took some of these goals and they informed and provided a lens for most of the curriculum that we've been doing. So this specifically, when a group comes, they have a 3-hour experience, and they go, half of their time is a food and agriculture tour and the other half is in the forest on the canopy. I lead the food and agriculture piece, and it's about learning about production. This is everyone getting to eat nasturtiums fresh from the garden. Generally, we have to go through, you have to shake off the aphids, you have to look inside, and then we talk about, people often talk about insects as protein. But a lot of these people have never eaten nasturtiums, don't know what they are, that they can even eat them. And so it's always trying to provide that experiential moment for them to ideally remember and look back and be like, I could do that at home as well. A key thing that we do is also through our procurement. So we, people often come, they have this team, and then we host them a fancy long table lunch. And what we've done is we work and we procure the food from a social enterprise in Vancouver's downtown east side, which is the most area across Canada that it has the most highest population of people living in poverty. And so we procure the food from there, and we talk about this business that's giving people gainful employment. And that through gainful employment, people can then have the revenue that they need to be food secure. And basically trying to make this connection that poverty is the key driver to food security issues. And so we by procuring, especially large institutions, how we buy our food can have a direct influence on poverty. One of our most successful things is activity. So this is a coffee cup activity that our team designed, and we basically engage people in putting together this complicated puzzle of the 6 supplies that chain that go into 1 cup of coffee. So we explore, they have to work as a team, so after the whole map is laid out, they reflect on the supply chain itself. We talk about what if it was fairly traded, what if it was organic, what happens when food is wasted. And then we also reflect, well, how did your team do this? Who was the leader? Was there a leader? And sort of challenging them to think about food systems globally, but also their team, the dynamic within their team. And I guess the icing on the cake for this program is that we're collaborating with a psychologist. Her name is Dr. Xiaying Xiao, and she's a Canada Research Chair in Sustainable Behavior Change. And this is our PhD student, Ivana, and she's just finishing up with us. But we run this 3-hour educational tour, but we've been really intentionally designing metrics and ways of how do we evaluate the impact. So testing people's knowledge, their willingness to act, and their awareness of sustainability issues. So we've just submitted our first research paper showing that this experience, a guided tour experience of only 3 hours, can impact those factors compared to people who come to the garden and don't have a guided tour. So just in closing and looking at the future, what we're trying to do for the program and for the work that I do is link it up to the SDGs and try to align garden education program and how we can connect to the new Sustainable Development Goals. Well, not new, I guess they're 2 years now, but they will take us out to 2030. And how do we have joined up policy and programs? So how can something as small as a garden who are engaging people make sure and bring everyone on board to a dialogue about global issues? So it's the sort of think globally, act locally, or is it the other way around? No, that's right. And lastly, I think it's about inclusion. A big piece is how do we make sure everyone who's involved in food systems is included at the table, and this is specifically in the Pacific Northwest, indigenous knowledge and indigenous plants. And it's also having diversity and inclusion of children and youth in these discussions and having children weigh in on the future of the food that they see. And how do we have programs, this is our horticulture training program, how do we have people being trained up in both horticulture and agriculture? So half of the people in our horticulture training program are interested in food production. So again, they're coming to horticulture because they're interested in food, and so bridging these worlds and making people walk out of these programs realizing that they're prepared for jobs in both sectors. And thank you very much.